I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports, The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN, New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I am your host, Rick Wolf. I want to do a follow-up on the Little League issues that we covered on last Sunday's show. I got to tell you, the response to that hour was very substantial from the WFAN listeners. And to that end, well, now that we're into the Williamsport Little League Championship playoffs, I want to return to that problem, what happened between Washington State and Oregon, because we still haven't received any kind of clarification on what happened to end that game. And by the way, of course, speaking of Little League, well, my heart goes out to the Massapequa Coast team, which was no hit on Friday night. But I got to tell you, that team from Hawaii, I mean, that team's got some real talent on it. That kid, Jared Lancaster, he is extraordinary. Plus, their entire team is experienced, and they are well coached. And it, you know, look, let me tell you something. When it comes to kids and losing, there's never anything dishonorable in losing so long as you tried your best. And you just happened to be beaten by a better team. And it was clear that the Massapequa team played their hearts out. But, you know, here's hoping that, well, today's a new day and they'll bounce back in their next game, which I believe is being played this afternoon. In any event, again, there's no disgrace in losing as long as you did your best. And, sometimes in life there are better teams. It's as simple as that. Okay, but first up, I'm eager to talk again about that controversial ending to the Washington State Bend, Oregon Little League Baseball playoff game, in which the winning team, the team that won that game, would get a ticket to go to Williamsport to play in the national championship playoffs. And indeed, you know, Washington State, you know, they got the ticket to go to Williamsport. But I got to tell you, I just can't get that sour taste out of my mouth as to how and why the team from Bend, Oregon, well, they didn't go. They were back home, probably still wondering what they did wrong and why they were eliminated because a couple of umpires screwed up a foul ball call. Now, friends, I know a lot of you have reached out to me and have said to me, Rick, this was just another teaching moment for these Oregon kids. And I hear you about that. But to me, a teaching moment occurs when the player makes a key mistake or a crucial error to lose a game. In contrast, a teaching moment based upon an adult's mistake and a mistake that could have been corrected, that's just not acceptable to me. And later on in the show, by the way, I want to talk more about that cell phone incident, that cell phone that popped out of Pittsburgh Pirates Rodolfo Castro's back pocket when he slid into third base in a major league game. As you may have heard, Castro has now been suspended by Major League Baseball for a game for having a phone tucked into his uniform. He's now appealing that ruling. More on that situation later on in the show. But let's start with that Washington State-Oregon fiasco. And just to recap, when the game was over, the Oregon head coach pleaded with the officials from Williamsport to take both Oregon and Washington State to the national tournament. And that plea was turned down by the Little League officials with no real or any kind of satisfactory explanation. Nor, in my opinion, did Little League work very hard at trying to get the word out to the media. They just said, nope, we're going to deny that appeal from Oregon. Well, in effect, and again, this is my opinion, Little League just wanted to move on and to try and basically shift people's attention to the national playoffs this week in Williamsport. Now, some of you said to me, look, Rick, life is tough and full of disappointments. It's up to the Oregon coach to explain this to his team that sometimes life doesn't go the way you want it to, and to make this, as I said, into a teaching opportunity. I mean, I get all that. But in this case, these kids were victimized by shoddy umpiring by adults. The kids did nothing wrong. I mean, in other sports where there are whistles that end a play, kids are taught at an early age to keep playing full hard, 100%, until the whistle blows. In baseball, if an umpire signals that a ball is foul, it's at that point that you relax and stop playing. So my question is, why didn't Little League get with the two umpires who worked that game and figure all this out? The third base umpire signaled foul. Apparently the home plate umpire ruled fair. And then once they had all the facts here, why didn't Little League then try to work out some sort of reasonable compromise and then let the world know about it? I mean, apparently Little League must have felt that once the video replay showed that the ball was fair, well, that was enough. The winning run's allowed to score. But no, that's not how it works. The video replay also showed the third base umpire signaling clearly the ball was foul. And that's what bothers me about this outrageous game outcome. Little League makes such a big deal about sportsmanship. So this was a perfect opportunity to show some real sportsmanship, and they blew it. It's as simple as that. If the two umpires forget the video replay, that's not the important issue here. Apparently, Little League's saying, well, the replay showed the ball was fair, so that formed the kid from first base who scored, that run counts. No. It's nothing to do with the replay. The replay also showed the third base umpire throwing his arms up right away saying foul ball. So Little League should have said, we got a problem here. Because it's not about whether the ball was fair or foul. It's how the kids in the field reacted to the third base umpire. Again, an adult. Now, why those two umpires didn't talk this over and say, or the third base umpire say to the home plate umpire, we got a problem here. Because the kids are going to get basically shafted by this, because all we're going to say is the replay shows the kid the ball is fair. It's not how you do it. It's not how you do it. And I know it's a teaching moment, but it's not a teaching moment, because this is a case where the adults could have done things right by Little League standards. I'm telling you, friends, going to Williamsport is a big deal. And, you know, this is the highlight of for most kids for their baseball career, and it's going to stay in their memories for the rest of their life and for their families, too. But in this case, the team from Oregon doesn't have those memories because some knuckleheaded umpires couldn't figure this out, how to do the right thing. And that's what bothers me big time. All right, I want to bring in my longtime colleague Steve Callis to get his thoughts about this. Steve, of course, is an attorney, top athlete at Power Memorial High School, NYU. He's done masterful investigations over the years into Little League. And of course, friends, we'll take your calls at 877-337-6666. Steve, good morning. It's always good to talk to you.
Great to be with you as always, Rick.
Steve, I got to ask you, when you saw this play, and knowing what you know about Little League over the years and how this play was resolved, what was your immediate reaction? I mean, were you outraged? Were you thinking, no, that's okay, that's how it goes?
Of course, I agree with you. This is not a learning moment when the prize is go to Williamsport or go home. I'm sorry, it's just not. But I did a deep dive on this, Rick, and it just got stranger and stranger, or curiouser and curiouser as I went along. But let me give you two things first. The rule that they relied on, which they didn't mention in their statement, and I have a copy of their official statement, which I'd like to read. But first, the rule. So Rule 9 is the umpire rule, and I'll just step back for a second. This is how sad it's become to me. Doesn't matter to me, but if you want to look at a rule book quickly, because I didn't have a chance to get the actual paper rule book, which I assume they still have, you got to pay $1.99 to get the Little League app. And then you got to pay $3.99 to buy the Little League rule book so you can read it on Kindle. This is where we are. You're a broke guy. You borrowed money to get your kid in the Little League, which I'm sure happens all over the country. And you got to do this. In the old days, right? 10, 15 years ago, you Googled it. You got the whole rule book, but
right.
Whatever.
Yep.
Rule 9 is the umpire rule, 9.04C. which is what they rely on without saying it in their statement, says as follows. If different decisions should be made on one play by different umpires, the umpire-in-chief shall call all the umpires into consultation. After consultation, the umpire-in-chief shall determine which decision shall prevail based on which umpire was in the best position and which decision was most likely correct. Play shall proceed as if only the final decision had been made.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly the home plate umpire was the umpire-in-chief. The two of them had a conversation, not all the umps. I never saw a video, and I looked at many different ones, Rick, where you could see the home plate umpire certainly signal fair ball, and all I can deduce is since the third base coach was waving the kid around all the time, that he heard the home plate umpire say fair ball, because he was the only one doing anything. Why? As you said, the third base ump, who's closest to the play, clearly called a foul ball. So what did Little League have to say about this? This is a strange statement to me, but this is the official statement regarding conclusion of this game. Quote, in the final play of the 2022 Little League Baseball Northwest Region Championship game, despite the on-field conclusion, I thought they meant confusion, but despite the on-field conclusion, the official call on the field was a fair ball by the home plate umpire. Ultimately, upon video review, there was not clear and concise evidence to determine whether the ball was fair or foul, and the fair ball call was sustained. While we regret any confusion at the end of the game, we remain supportive of all the volunteers who were involved in this matter. There's so many issues there, starting with the volunteers. We've talked about this
year. Yeah.
Rank these umpires, pay these umpires well to be there, and get the best umpires, okay? But the way I see this is you can rely on 904C, where the umpire, the home plate umpire, was clearly the dominant guy. The third base umpire is closer. He's closer to the play. He's in the best position, it seems to me. And, oh, by the way, as you pointed out many times in the last few Sundays, everybody stops. That's what you're taught to do. The umpire raises his hands, foul ball, everybody stops, except I think the third base coach on the winning team heard something that would have his kid keep running home, and there was not even a play at the plate. So I have a couple other things to say about that, but I'll let you jump in.
Well,
because
let me just
something
say
should
this.
Have happened right then.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, in watching their video replay, it's your attention is first drawn to the third base umpire.
Correct.
And he throws his hands up right away and says foul ball. The team in the field, the Oregon team, kids relax. That's what you do. It's a foul ball. So then it's like a second goes by, a split second, and you notice the third base coach, his attention is drawn to the, I guess, the umpire at home, who you can't see on the screen.
Right.
And he all of a sudden, he starts frantically waving the kid from first base to keep running to second, to third, and to score.
Yep.
So clearly, he must have heard something or saw something from the home plate umpire that said, aha, I guess it's a fair ball. We must have the kid keep running, and then we'll figure out after the play. Now, to your point about this Rule 9 in the Little League rule book, it is inexplicably confusing. I mean, even the coach from Oregon who appealed the play, and he said, you know, he thought he was had read the rule book pretty thoroughly, and he was convinced that, you know, when two umpires have a conflict, you go with the foul ball for the common sense ruling that because the other team is at a disadvantage once they relax on a play. So he was absolutely convinced that they would just basically, you know, stop the game, figure this out, and pick it up either in Williamsport, you know, have both teams go to Williamsport and have a play-in game, if you will, or figure it up right there, you know, where the game was playing out west somewhere. So
yeah.
It doesn't make any sense why they would do this and not even talk about it after the game, they being Little League.
I have two quick things on that, and the second one is the weirdest thing I've seen yet. But first, and you may know this, Rick, but in the law, there is a saying that dates back to England in the 1600s, was made famous by Charles Dickens and Oliver Twist when Mr. Bumble said, quote, don't let the law be an ass. An ass referring to a donkey, by the way, not what we would look at it like today. And I can tell you firsthand that through the centuries, literally, into the late 20th century when I've been a lawyer, and the 21st century when I've been a lawyer, lawyers will argue that when you have a stupid rule that results in a stupid holding. And I think that's what we have here. But the even weirder thing, so I found an article that talked about specifically about the Oregon manager and what he did. And he cites a line from the Little League rule book that I cannot find, Rick, and I'll tell you what I did to try and find it. But he cites this, and I can't find it in the Little League rule book, and I did a search for it, the full quote and the word irrevocably. And here's the quote that he says is from the Little League rule book that, of course, Little League never dealt with. Quote, if a batted ball is inadvertently called foul and it touches the ground in live ball territory, it is irrevocably foul and the ball is dead. Now, if that's true and that's in the Little League rule book,
yes,
that seems to me to be at a minimum at conflict with 904 that I read before and should overrule it because of what you said. It was obvious that everybody stopped. It should have been a strike and they continued. They should have had some right there on the field conclusion that was better and not confusing rather than the game be over. And I think, I'll just say finally, logistically, I think Little League said, oh, what a nightmare. These people are in the upper northwest of the country. And it was over the weekend. We're starting Williamsport on Wednesday. So how are we going to do something? If it wasn't corrected right then and there, Rick, and I think it should have been, as you said, make it a foul ball, maybe make it first and second if it was a fair ball. But something should have happened right then. And once it didn't, I think what you said previously was true. Little League, they just wanted to move on because we got the tournament starting in 3 days.
You know, and to that point, look, Williamsport, Little League Baseball, Little League International, this is a big, big business. As Steve, as you and I have talked over and over the years, this is multi-million dollars.
Correct.
I like to present the fact this is like, you know, old, you know, little kids pick up baseball out of the movie Sandlot. But friends, trust me, this is big, big business. We know that ESPN pays them millions of dollars every year just to televise the games. We know this. So if Little League has a lot of money, and they do. Well, again, and he couldn't figure this out on right there at the game was over. Then you should have just said, okay, here's what we're going to do here. We're going to fly both teams to Williamsport, and we'll have a playing game, pick up the game from right where the game ended.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
Friends, literally, you know, you're going to have all sorts of substantial TV ratings as baseball fans everywhere are going to tune in to see this. How are you going to do the right thing? You're going to do the right thing by Oregon and say, you know what, here's how we're going to play this out, because obviously there was a screw-up with the umpires, and we don't want to basically, you know, shaft these poor kids from Oregon who did nothing wrong.
That's correct.
If I had been the coach from Oregon, I'd still be burning. I'd still be so angry about this because I just think my kids did nothing wrong, and that's up to me as the coach to explain to my kids that I'm sorry, but the umpire at home plate looked at the video replay and thought the ball was fair. Yeah, but looked at the coach at the third base umpire. It's just bizarre to me. Again, for an organization that builds itself up on sportsmanship and doing the right thing, you know, I just don't get how they just botched this. I just don't get it. And again, there's no discussion of it on the air. You don't hear anybody doing the games from Williamsport talking about that. It's just,
of course not.
It never happened.
Of course not.
It's not
I happened. Can give you 60 seconds on the bunk bed thing if you want to go there.
Well,
Rick,
let's talk about that as well, because you know, again, nobody. This was a horrible accident with the kid from Utah. You know, was in a high bunk bed, and middle of the night he was sleeping. I guess he fell out of the bunk bed and must have hit his head seriously, and was obviously rushed to the hospital. And I guess he's doing much, much better today. The kid Easton Oliverson, he's back, and he seems to be making tremendous progress, but he does a lot of therapy to get him back to where he was. But again, you know what I read, Steve, and maybe you read the same thing. A Little League spokesperson told the Salt Lake Tribune that the bunk beds have been in the dorms at Williamsport since 1992, and you know, we do not have guardrails on these beds, which right away thinks, like, if I'm a parent,
correct.
You put guardrails on the bunk bed because you don't want your kid falling out of the bed in the middle of the night. But
I can read you the statement, and then I just have a quick comment.
Yeah.
Quote, since 1992, Little League has used institutional-style bunk beds to offer the most space for the players to enjoy their time in the dorms. While these beds do not have guardrails, Little League is unaware of any serious injuries ever occurring during that period of time. Out of an abundance of caution, Little League has made the decision to remove all bunks from within the dorms and have each bed frame individually on the floor. And this is the quintessential. I wonder if parents are not allowed to go into these dorms, because if my kid was ever in the Little League World Series and I walked in, I'll give you a quick side note. So I grew up on Dyckman Street in Inwood in Upper Manhattan. We didn't have a lot of money. We slept three kids in the one bedroom. My parents slept in the living room.
Yep.
I stayed at the top of a bunk bed, and I had a guard, and this is, as you know, 100 years ago. And if I didn't have that guard, I would have fallen out of that bed plenty of times. So the notion, the defense is, yeah, we never had guardrails.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Institutional style bunk beds strike me as like prison bunk beds. Strike me as, what's the movie, The Great Escape, or where they show them sleeping in bunk beds. And you just wonder, how stupid can this be? So because you had nobody fracture their skull until this past week, it was like, okay. I wouldn't even be against bunk beds, Rick, if you told me there were guards. Now, of course, they're going the total opposite way. I'll be shocked if there's no lawsuit here, because Easton Oliverson fractured his skull and was 30 minutes away from death, according to the doctors, if they didn't get him there quicker because of bleeding on the brain. So I don't know if you need a catastrophic injury like this to change. Obviously, for Little League, once again, you do need a catastrophic injury to change. But I'll say it again. I wonder if the parents are not allowed in these dorms for the privacy of the kids. I don't know. But any mother, and even intelligent fathers, would go, what, are you kidding me? My kid's not sleeping on the top of the bunk bed here.
I mean, it says, well, I mean, if your defense is since 1992, nobody's ever fallen out of no accidents. What? That's not a defense. That's just stupidity.
I don't even know if that's true, by the way, Rick.
We don't know. Of course not. So, but again, Steve, and of course, you have basically, you know, over the years talked about Little League and their love of aluminum bats and their defense that a ball off an aluminum bat is no faster than a ball off a wooden bat.
Yeah, no problem.
I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, come on now. And they finally sort of said, oh, well, you know, we'll figure this out. And they finally come to the 21st century. Or allowing kids to throw hundreds and hundreds of pitches during the course of the tournament.
Yeah.
Well, they finally, oh, yeah, pitch time, maybe we should do that. That wouldn't have happened unless Steve Callis was talking about these things on the fan, saying, "What this is supposed to be about fun and enjoyment and safety, and Little League doesn't seem to respond to this stuff."
I mean, well, I appreciate you saying that, Rick, but it's your show, and you're the guy who got Steve Keener to say on your air that if Dr. James Andrews comes to me and says there's a problem with the days of rest or with the pitch counts, I'll certainly blah, blah, blah. He's not going to listen to you. He's not going to listen to me. But then I interviewed Dr. James Andrews, as you'll recall, and he was livid when he found out. And it took a couple of years. But not only did Dr. James Andrews get the days of rest, previously a little leaguer could throw 257 pitches in 7 days.
Yeah.
But then they changed it because of Dr. Andrews, spurred mainly by you and partly by me. And I will say this, you had Dr. Kremchek, who operated on Kyle Kottkamp, who had thrown 237 pitches in 7 days. Tommy John surgery at 15, and he called it child abuse, you'll recall.
Absolutely.
On the Brian Gumbel show. So I think what mainly you did, I'll take an assist on the play, but I think we saved hundreds, if not thousands, of Tommy John surgeries because they finally fixed it. But again, it took a couple of years. And as you know, and we talked about, eventually Dr. Andrews left Little League. There was no, everybody kissed and, yeah, thanks for helping us and everything. But behind the scenes, I can tell you firsthand, because I interviewed him, he was livid.
Yeah,
and they finally fixed it.
Dr. James Andrew, the most notable orthopedic surgeon over the last 50 years, and he was on the board with Little League, and he finally just said, this is insane. He doesn't want to be involved or affiliated with an organization that doesn't follow his advice in terms of kids throwing curveballs, because of the torque on the kid's elbow and causing, you know, all sorts of Tommy John. I mean, it was just crazy. And yet we still put Little League on this pedestal of it's the safest sport in the round. No, folks. I mean, and look what they did these poor kids, Morgan. They just basically shafted them of a chance to go to Williamsport.
I agree.
I don't get it. Steve, let me thank you as always for your input on this and for doing your research. We'll see what happens down the road with Little League, but boy, oh boy, they just, again, I just wish somebody somewhere would pick up the cudgel and say, maybe the time has come to look at Little League and figure out if they're doing the right thing for all these kids. Simple as that. Steve Callis, my thanks as always. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Always a pleasure, Rick.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I know we have calls about this. I want to get your thoughts as well at 877-337-6666. Before we move back to our calls, I just want to mention from the Sports Edge police blotter that the tragic case of a youth football coach being shot and killed in Texas. The details are still somewhat sketchy, but from what I heard, the Tlaib brothers, that's Aqib Tlaib, the former NFL star, and his brother Yaqub, were coaching a kid's football game. There was some sort of dispute regarding an official's call. An argument erupted between the two different coaching staffs, and again, Aqib Tlaib's brother somehow felt compelled to have to shoot the other team's coach and shoot him several times. Now, Yaqub Tlaib, he's turned himself into the Dallas County police force, and he's been charged with murder. This shooting was done during the game in front of all the 9-year-old kids who were playing. And like we've said on the show for some time now, the alarming number of violent incidents at youth games, it just continues to escalate and escalate with physical violence, in this case, gunshots. Friends, we need to figure this out because I don't really see this kind of this abhorrent behavior ending on its own. You just don't resolve game disputes by pulling out a gun and shooting the opposing coach. Okay, 877-337-6666. Let's start our calls. Let's go over to Jackie in Hewlett this morning. Jackie, good morning. You're on the fan.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate the dilemma here, and I think it's a very difficult thing for the adults to handle. My daughter went through, she aged out in Little League, and we as parents always thought that baseball teaches lessons of life. I think you're right about that. But I think we're missing the lesson here. I said the lesson is that you can't always solve every problem. And the rule book, everybody's quoting certain things in the rule book, I think the rule book handles it. I think both umpires really tried their best. And each umpire did the best they could. We rely on the umpires, like the coaches, to do the best for the kids.
But Jackie, let me stop you there.
Sure.
We're not talking about, and I hear you, umpires, you know, do their best. We know that. Particularly, they're in a national spotlight on a televised game. They're trying to make their division. It's their judgment calls. I get that. We all agree with that. But this, after the call was made, and they're looking at the video replay, and they waited 5-10 minutes before they made a decision that, oh, the ball was fair. But that misses the point. It wasn't whether the ball was fair or foul. The question is, what are the implications if we rule that this was a fair ball and the kid from first base is allowed to score? How is that fair to the opposing team? And Jackie, I hear you. Thank you for your call this morning. But I got to tell you, as you can tell, I'm pretty steamed about this because that wasn't a judgment call. That was like two grown-ups thinking, okay, is this, what is the outcome here? Is this fair to the losing team? And it wasn't. And nobody will tell you it's fair because it wasn't. And I don't think it has anything to do with the umpires working hard. Of course they're working hard. Do they want to make the right call? Of course. Then they should have taken the next step and said, is this the right thing to the opposing team? Simple as that. Let's move on. Let's go to Dave up in Croton. Hey, Dave, good morning. You're on the fan.
Coach Wolf, long time no speak. Dave Griner here, sir. How are you?
Dave Griner, one of the all-time great umpires. Dave, I'm curious to get your thought about all this.
Well, in baseball, two things first. First thing, the young man who fell out of the bed, his situation dwarfs what we're talking about here. And it just adds to the list of my concerns with, you know, Little League Baseball and Williamsport. I think they're more concerned with the room in the back of the Little League field there that prints the money every August for themselves. But umpiring, Rick, you've been around long enough to know if you have a three-man system and there's an umpire on the baseline, as soon as the ball crosses the front part of the bag, it's the base umpire's call, fair or foul.
Right.
Base umpire calls foul ball. Now, a fair ball can be made foul. A foul ball can never be made fair except for one exception. So as soon as the third base umpire called the ball foul, it's a dead ball. The play's over. A foul ball can be made fair only if it's a question of ball being a home run or not, a fair or foul home run.
So that ball
was on the ground, it wasn't.
So Dave, listening to your rationale here, to your explanation, when the umpire at third base puts his hands up, as he did immediately, and said foul ball, well, the play's over, right?
Play over.
So
play is over.
So
and umpiring mechanics 101 says it's the third base umpire's call as soon as the ball crosses the front of the third base bag.
Right. So why is there even a replay? Why are they even doing a replay? Why are they? And I mean,
because one, I think you know you brought it up last week. I wasn't able to get through. You're getting what you pay for with these volunteers.
Yeah.
And sadly, if you watch enough Little League baseball, I applaud them for getting out there and trying their best. But you know, some of the balls and strikes calls are embarrassing. They're absolutely embarrassing. And Little League Baseball should be ashamed of themselves. There was a play in one of the Western Finals where there was a ground ball to the shortstop, and the throw went over past the first baseman, and it hit the coach in the batter's box. And the plate umpire called the runner out for coach's interference. Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, the guys that want to umpire, I applaud them for getting out there, but if you're going to put them on the field, You got to know your rules. You got to know your rule book. You got to know what you're doing. And it really puts a bad stain on all umpires when any umpires on a national level like that, and it shows their basic incompetence behind the plate and then the misapplication of rules.
Well, every year, Dave, I can tell you, like the Swallows returning to Capistrano, every year when Little League Baseball comes around in the fall, in the summertime, I get a raft of calls and emails from people saying, why does Little League continue to pride themselves over using volunteer umpires? Why don't they go out and hire real professional umpires who obviously know the rule book and, B, you know, have an idea of what they're doing out there? And especially the biggest complaints are about the balls and strikes, that, you know, the kids are being called out on balls that are 2 feet off the plate. It's just bizarre to me. Yet Little League makes this a big deal, like it's something to be proud of. And, you know, these kind of rulings, if you're watching the game, you know anything about baseball, you say, what rule book are they using, you know?
But is it a little bit Twilight Zone-ish? And, you know, I have a lot of concerns with what, you know, I don't know if it's coming out of the COVID situation, but every play that's made, obviously one of the kids is making it out, one of the kids, the reaction of the kids is becoming much more, you know, the emotions they're really emotional now. They really got to take a step back and really see where they're coming from here. And, you know, you get what you pay for. You want to use volunteers, you're not going to get the best umpires. And
yeah,
if it's supposed to be world championship of Little League Baseball, you know, they're not going to use volunteer umpires when the Orioles play the Red Sox tomorrow night in the Little League Classic. You know, instead, the professional umpires are taking it on the chin all the time, and they're the best in the world.
Dave, I hear you loud and clear in this, and again, we know that Little League has lots of money. They certainly can afford to pay all their quote-unquote volunteers, whether the umpires, the ushers, the people, you know, working the concession stands. Pay these people. I mean, come on now. I mean, let's do the right thing. Maybe 75 years ago, they didn't have any money. Little League was a startup operation. I get that, but now you guys are thriving. It's a huge national, international operation. Get good umpires and let the umpires, you know, who know the game and know the rule book, let them work the kids' game. Simple as that. Hey, Dave, thank you for chiming. It's always good to hear from you. And as I said, I appreciate your expertise. Let's go quickly over to Jack Smithlin over in Fairlawn. Jack, are you there?
How are you?
Jack.
I'm here.
Before we
I'm
take
here.
A break, tell me your thoughts about all this.
Well, first of all, you know, the first thing that I thought about the Little League situation is if the home plate umpire made the call first, that might have changed the story a little bit. But when kids are taught to stop, you know, or to react to an umpire's call and they relax, that changes the whole thing. The play, like your the last caller said, and I said last week, as soon as that ball was called foul, it's a dead ball.
Right.
Automatically, no thoughts about it. You know, I think that, I personally think in my heart that Little League Baseball owes an explanation to every listener, every person from Oregon, every player, every family member of that team, and every listener that has been listening and watching their games for many, many years. They, to just say that the game is over gives us no recall as to why it's over. You know, like your last caller, you know, the point is this, is that you ruined it for these kids. You ruined it for their rest of their lives. They got to think about this. You know, and I have friends that I'm talking to and say, for Christ's sake, it's just a baseball game. Well, you know what? It's just a baseball game to you, to them, to these kids and their families. This is life right now, whether they want to realize it or not. And you know what? It's something that has to be changed. It has to be changed automatically. And you know what? You talked about something at the beginning. There's no dishonor in losing. There's only dishonor in not playing the game. You know, so when you talk about what it means to these kids and what Little League has done, they did an injustice to every single fan of Little League Baseball.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And for the fact that Little League Baseball, you know, really didn't address this, again, when the game ended, the game was an extra inning, so Little League or ESPN wanted to get the game off as quickly as possible and move on to the next piece of programming, which was the Derek Jeter documentary. But there was no time for any of the commentators to come in and say, what happened here, or talk to the umpires as to why did you make that ruling, which would have made common sense, or talk to somebody at the game from Little League and saying, explain to our millions of viewers what was the decision made here? How is this fair? And as you say, Jack, you know, for kids and their parents and the town of Bend, Oregon, they're like, what the heck is this all about? I mean, what did we do wrong here? Our kids played their hearts out, and they got nothing to show for it. I mean, it was a perfect opportunity in so many ways for an organization that prides itself on doing the right thing and sportsmanship, whatever, and they just walked away and gave a very little, in fact, no explanation whatsoever. It's just bizarre.
No,
it's just bizarre.
Nothing at all.
And it's gonna. And as far as they're concerned, oh, now we're moving on to you know, the Williamsport tournament, and those games are done. And you know, so what? That's the way it goes. Umpire judgment. No. It has to do with just common sense. And whatever. I know I shouldn't be so worked up about it, but I tell you, friends, I really am worked up about it because, as I said earlier, I can just imagine if I had been the head coach of that team and thinking, how do I explain this to the kids and their parents as to what happened and how come we're going home as losers when we did nothing wrong? Anyhow, Jack, thank you.
You have every right.
I mean, I feel the same way, and I hope somebody, you know, at a national platform really says, this has got to change. This is nuts. Anyhow, Jack, thank you. I got to take a break, but thanks as always for checking in. All right, let me take a time out here, and again, we'll come back, take more of your calls at 877-337-6666. Friends, just to remind you, you can always find me on Twitter at Ask Coach Wolf. Get a preview of the upcoming shows, and also my website is askcoachwolf.com, where you can also reach out to me. By the way, that show we did a couple of weeks ago about those mega youth sports complexes, that podcast is now posted. You can find it at WFAN.com, or you can go to AskCoachWolf.com, because I know a lot of you wanted to hear that show in its entirety, but it's now posted. Also, very, very quickly, about a note about the passing of Hall of Fame basketball coach Pete Carril. Now, for those of you who are old enough to have seen Pete coach at Princeton, he was a real magician, and he was the antithesis of today's college basketball coaches who are all multimillionaires and are all, you know, slick and wear Armani suits and so on and so forth. Pete Carril was, you know, he was really the quintessential old school but very, very successful college basketball coach. He got those undersized, scrawny Ivy Leaguers at Princeton to believe in his disciplined system. I mean, his teams were just fun to watch, as they would lull the opposing team to sleep with Princeton's weaving back and forth at the top of the key, only to suddenly launch a backdoor pass for an easy layup. I mean, those were fun teams to watch. And Kirill was a, you know, he was a true original. And in fact, a lot of us played for old school coaches when we were in high school, maybe in college, who were a lot like Kirill. The bottom line was that Pete's teams won, and they won, and they won. And he was an amazing and a heck of a guy and a beloved character. Okay, let's get back to our calls about this Little League nonsense. Let's continue with Rob out in Lake Success. Rob, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Rick, thank you for getting me on here. And I must say, first of all, I'm feeling a lot better. I know I reached out to you.
Yes.
The COVID bug did bite me. Fortunately, the vaccines do work, and that's a little my little point here. Just some little sniffles, and I'm one of those lucky ones who day seven, I'm negative now, and back to doing what I got to do. And but get the vaccines, everybody. That's just my thought there. You know, Rick, I want to tell you, thinking about sitting home, you know, for the last few days, listening to the radio and watching television, I saw two great documentaries, and it all pertains to this. It was the Mexican team in 1963. There's a great documentary, people, called Perfect Game, and it's about that 63 team that got out of Mexico and got to win at Williamsport. And these kids, this is what it's all about. I mean, getting to Williamsport is a big deal. I did hear Governor Christie was on the afternoon show, and here's a guy who made it in politics, but yet he was talking about getting to Williamsport, how important that was to him, as well as being a high school state champion and making the Hall of Fame. And I guess the afternoon host didn't understand how important that was, because it was kind of like, wow, you know, that was such a big deal. Hey, it is a big deal, everybody. This is something these kids out on Long Island, for the rest of their lives, okay, they're going to have that opportunity to talk about this. And these poor kids out west did not have that chance, Rick.
Yep.
And, you know, I think, you know, Steve Cowles brought up an amazing point, which I sent over to you. I think, sadly, it's logistics, Rick. They didn't have the opportunity. At the regional level, it's almost like Williamsport wanted to say, you know, listen, you guys did your part. We're too big for this now. We're at the point of the championships, the World Series, and they probably just didn't have the logistics set up to bring a team in, maybe setting another precedent. But sadly, and that's my final point on all this, is
it's all about the kids.
The kids, Rick, are the ones that are going to have this opportunity taken away from them, because none of them might ever even get to the high school level.
Of course.
These are 12-year-old kids that maybe might not become good enough as kids mature. They're not maybe going to get to the level of a high school team. So they're the ones that are missing out. The families are missing out. And I hope that you bring this to the forefront. Little League World Series has got a lot of looking up to, you know, going forward in this situation. And thanks for getting me in here.
Yeah, Rob, I thank you for your thoughts. And, yeah, I have a sense that maybe that's what happened. Of course, Little League will never, ever admit that, well, the logistics were already set in stone, and we just wanted to have one team come out of that Northwest playoff, and we couldn't afford or couldn't work out a situation where two teams would come to Williamsport to have a playing game. But, again, somebody somewhere has to say, you know, at the executive level, you know, the board of advisors for Little League, and say, you know what? Sometimes we just got to say, let's do something right for the kids here. I don't think, obviously, money was an issue, because Little League is worth millions and millions and millions of dollars. That's been well documented, not only on this show several times, but everybody knows that. Yeah, it's a 501c3 not-for-profit, but they have lots and lots of money with those multimillion-dollar contracts and big endorsements they get from national sponsors. So they had the money wasn't a problem. Number two is, well, logistically, you got a couple of fields in Williamsport. Just have this other game come in as a playing game, and it's a special event, and we're doing the right thing for these kids from Oregon, because we, as grown-ups, we made a mistake. We simple as that. And that's, to me, what they should have done. I mean, it's just, I still can't understand what these kids in Oregon, you know, when how do their parents, how do their coaches, you know, how do their friends, neighbors, relatives, how do they explain this, that we played hard, we saw the umpire raise his hands to signal a foul ball, and all of a sudden, suddenly, the game's over, and we did nothing wrong. I mean, we heard, you know, Dave Greiner who's umpired for years and years in Westchester and Rockland County, say, no, the umpire said it's a foul ball. Simple as that. The ball is dead. You can't just wave a kid around from first base and say, well, that's how it goes. He's not a winning run because the replay showed the ball was fair. But the umpire said it was a foul ball. Little League really dropped the ball in this one in so many ways, and I just feel for these kids out of Bend, Oregon. And obviously for baseball fans everywhere who watched the game, as I did, saying, what the heck is going on? All right, that's it for me. My thanks, as always, to Ed Arzuman. Mark Melusis, he comes along next during the Fan. I'll see you next Sunday on Rick Wolf's Sports Edge.
I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.